Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So we've been hearing a lot about energy, natural gas, oil, fracking, all of these things. And I keep my eyes and ears open to looking for articles on this subject. Is this something that we should be invested in? Should this be part of your portfolio? How about North America? Pretty exciting stuff. We're seeing these oil fields come online and pumping out now millions of barrels a day. So I invited a gentleman who can help us understand this a little bit better. I ran across his article in Investment News. That's a leading information source for financial advisors, which, of course, I read religiously. And his name is Brian Kessens. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks, David. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you on the program because you are you're tuned into this very well. And that's good because we can't be tuned into everything all the time. It's hard to have be both deep and wide in a lot of areas. So Brian is a CFA, which is a chartered financial analyst. It's like the, I always tell people, Brian, that's like the CPA of investments, but even harder.
Okay. I'll take that for what it's worth,
right,
for sure.
Yeah. Take that because I know something about it. And Brian works as portfolio manager and senior investment analyst for Tortoise Capital. And his website, tortoiseadvisors.com, steady wins. That's the way to go, right?
That's right.
All right. And Brian earned his master's in business administration from Columbia Business School in New York, bachelor's of science in economics from United States Military Academy at West Point. He also served as a field artillery officer in the U.S. Army.
That's correct.
All right. Well, thank you for your service to our country. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. And so we're going to talk with Brian today about energy, about North America. And again, your article really caught my attention. You, great job of kind of laying out what's going on. Tell us a little bit about your Tortoise Capital Advisors before we get into the topic so people can understand some of your perspective.
Sure. We at Tortoise Capital manage over $15 billion dedicated really strictly to the energy industry.
Good.
We've got over a decade of experience doing so. We consider ourselves really pioneers in energy investing, and that really remains our focus. We manage that $15 billion through three open-end funds,
okay,
seven closed-end funds, and separately managed accounts. And I think we differentiate ourselves a little bit maybe from some of our competitors that we have a really deep and experienced team of 53, 14 of which are on the portfolio team alone.
Sure.
Our investment approach, I think you said it at the outset, which was steady. That our approach is very long-term in nature, team-based, and we're focused quite a bit on risk, where we look at risk as kind of what's the potential for the permanent loss of capital aside from volatility or other popular measures.
Manage risk first.
That's exactly right. And
okay.
From the outset, really, we've had kind of a mantra of yield, growth, and quality. That has stood the test of time for us really well.
Excellent, excellent. So you guys are really focused in on the energy area. So I guess the obvious question is, I kind of set it up, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
Why energy now?
Yeah, I think now is just an incredibly great opportunity to invest in energy because the companies are growing. There are production companies that have reserves that are in really economic areas, and those that have the balance sheets to fund that growth through significant capital investment should be able to grow cash flow significantly and earn very attractive returns on that capital. There are also midstream and downstream infrastructure companies where there are estimates that about $890 billion needs to be spent on midstream and downstream infrastructure between now and 2025.
Wow.
We need to build more pipelines and terminals to facilitate that additional supply and demand. And, there are other just industrial companies that are moving from a competitive disadvantage by being in the U.S. to now they have a competitive advantage.
Oh, that's great.
So now I think just it's a terrific time to invest in the energy revolution, if you will.
And I'm glad it's here at home. I mean, that, you know, a lot of people would of course love to invest where it's going to stay home and it's going to, you know, help our own economic development. And that's excellent. So a lot of the opportunities that your firm and your funds are investing, a lot of it is domestic then.
That's correct. We at Tortoise are nearly solely focused on investing in the U.S. and Canada or North America, if you want to capture both of those countries.
Excellent. And so are you, the investing that you're doing, this $15-some billion that you guys oversee with your various funds, are you doing that through direct investment in stocks like, I don't know, Exxon or other, or are you doing it through the master limited partnerships, or how are you, what are the actual things you're putting into your funds?
Right. They are all publicly traded securities.
Oh, good.
And we do have, you know, you mentioned at the outset kind of the steady wins philosophy, and we do have a particular emphasis on investing in master limited partnerships, which we think are great investments for that yield growth quality mantra, because they have relatively high yield. We think pipelines are really high quality companies in and of themselves. And right now, they have an elevated growth profile of between 6 and 8% on an annual basis.
That's very good.
But we are focused on the other parts of the energy value chain, also the upstream producers, of which Exxon would be one example.
Yeah.
We're focused more so on those countries that are nearly entirely focused on North America, as opposed to Exxon, which is much more international.
Okay, so more of a domestic focus for those both at the, you know, you mentioned upstream, downstream, you know, kind of different points of the distribution, the extraction, the transportation, the delivery.
Correct, and okay. Then the downstream, which is those can be the refiners, the companies that are taking the crude oil and turning it into the gasoline, which we use every day, or the utility companies, which are taking natural gas and making power, or the petrochemical companies, which are taking natural gas liquids, turning them into other products that we use or inputs into the plastics business.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Very good. If you're just joining us, Brian Kessin, CFA, Tortoise Capital is our guest today. Website is tortoiseadvisors.com. We'll take a quick break, and I've got a whole bunch more questions for Brian, so stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Kessin, CFA, is on the line with me, Chartered Financial Analyst. He is the Portfolio Manager and Senior Investment Analyst with Tortoise Capital, tortoiseadvisors.com. And we're talking about energy, U.S. energy, why investing in the U.S. energy markets is a good thing to do. And I want to go back to something real quick, Brian, if we can, about, you mentioned we were talking about refineries, and you'll know the answer to this. How many total refineries do we have in the United States? It's a fairly limited number, isn't it?
It is a limited number. There's just over 100 refineries in the U.S., and I think kind of the interesting tidbit with that is there hasn't been a new refinery built since 1976.
That's what I thought, and I always get those things kind of confused in my mind with the number of nuclear reactors we have, and I think that number stands at around 100 as well. Yeah. Now, answer this question, because you probably know this as well. Out in the, you know, everyday world, people always, you know, always hear people grumbling around. You know, we go into the summer driving season, always seems like that's the time they want to take all the refineries offline for quote-unquote repairs, and it seems like it jacks up the price because refineries are offline. But do they do some sort of switch of fuel or something that causes that to be a real reason?
You know, there is a little bit of more technical reason than that. There's a winter blend and a summer blend, and the winter blend actually uses a little bit more butane,
okay,
which is kind of a cheaper input into the gasoline stream. And then as we go into the summer, because of the vapor pressure, you're not able to use as much butane.
Oh, okay.
So you take the butane out of it. What that results in is kind of a higher product that you're forced to purchase.
Okay, which means it's going to cost a little more.
That's right.
Oh, so it's not a conspiracy after all.
Not.
I always hear people grumble about that. Well, that's good. See, so Brian really does know what he's talking about. He didn't even know I was going to give him that question. He did not get the questions in advance. Let's go. This is not Jeopardy. You didn't get the questions in advance, did you?
No, not at all.
All right, good. Okay, so I've got a whole bunch of questions for you, Brian. I'm very curious because if you guys are doing $15 billion of investment management with your open-end, closed-end, and other funds. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the U.S. You know, we've seen, I mean, it's almost like I know this terminology has been overused, but it's almost like an energy revolution. You know, you've got the fields, the Bakken Shale in North Dakota?
Correct. The Bakken Shale.
Bakken Shale.
Yep.
Okay. And they're doing what, 1 million barrels a day?
They just went over 1 million barrels per day of crude oil production.
Wow.
At the end of last year, which, you know, you just go back a few years before that, they were doing very little by way of crude oil production. So it's an amazing amount of growth, particularly in that region of the U.S.
And then you've got Eagle Ford in South Texas also doing the same. They're actually over 1 million barrels a day.
Correct.
And then you've got the Permian Basin in Texas and New Mexico. There's another 1.3 million or so.
That's right.
And that's expected to grow?
Yes.
Wow.
The Permian Basin probably has, of the three, the greatest growth profile right now. It started with a little bit of a higher production, but what we're finding in the Permian Basin is that there's not just kind of one layer of shale, but there are multiple layers of shale, which we're still learning about and still learning how to apply the best technologies to get even more oil from those shales. So I think of the three, from a crude oil production perspective, the Permian probably has the most legs in the story, if you will.
Interesting. So our total North American crude oil production, so that includes both U.S. and Canada, is that about 8 million barrels a day?
No, the 8 million would just be the U.S.
Wow.
You add Canada to that, that's about another 3 million barrels per day.
Good grief.
So we're combined, you know, we're well over 10, which,
wow.
Again, if you just go back, if you just go back to 2008, we were between 5 and 6 million barrels per day.
So if we're at 8 million barrels a day, what are we using a day?
We actually use between 15 and 16 million barrels per day.
So we're halfway there.
We're halfway there. And in fact, we just we've traditionally, at least over the past decade, imported much more crude oil than we actually than we produce ourselves. We now actually, from a holistic perspective, we produce more in the U.S. than we import. Which is something you never would have thought of 10 years ago.
Yes, if you're using 15, 8 is greater than 7. So that's a good, okay. So now we got to transport it. And you mentioned before that we took our break, you mentioned about the construction of pipelines and things like that. And of course, all over the news is the Keystone Pipeline, which has been delayed for, I don't have an answer, I only can speculate, but it seems like maybe political reasons, been delayed again without really any clarity about when it's going to be approved. So how do we ship the stuff or get it where it needs to go? And there's also concerns about transportation over rail systems, where it used to be only a handful of the cars would have fuel, and now you might have a whole train that is all fuel. So there's a lot of concerns about transporting this and being able to, you know, all this 8 million barrels a day, we got to get it somewhere. So how do we overcome some of these delays? Are there opportunities in that?
Yeah, no, I think there absolutely is. That's one of the items that the energy industry is struggling with, is how actually to get all of this new production to the demand centers and to the cities and into the refineries. I think, you know, you bring up a good point with Keystone, and that it has been delayed for what seems like a long time at this point. But I would say that that's really just one isolated pipeline incident, and that it requires approval from the State Department because it does cross an international border. But we're building a lot of other pipelines domestically that do not need the State Department's approval for us to build. In fact, in some cases, they do need the federal government, but if they're just intrastate, you just need to get the local authorities authorities to approve it. So, for example, from the Permian Basin, which is in West Texas, we're currently constructing several pipelines to take crude to Cushing, Oklahoma, which is one of the bigger crude oil hubs in the world, and to the Houston area. And then other areas like the Bakken, the Marcellus Shale, which is more of a gas production story in the Northeast, we're continuing to build new pipelines and to better utilize the pipelines that currently exist, whether that's changing them from natural gas service to crude oil service, et cetera.
So there's a lot of growth.
There is. And if you just look on the crude oil production side, I think it's fair to say that we continue just to be in the early innings of this production growth story.
That's excellent. All right, we're going to take another quick, real quick. Brian Kessin, CFA, is our guest, Tortoise Capital. He's a portfolio manager and senior investment analyst, tortoiseadvisors.com. When we get back, I want to ask Brian about some specific opportunities for investors with all of these things that we're hearing about. So stay right there.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're with Brian Kessins here, CFA, and he's helping us understand more about the U.S. energy opportunities. And we talked about, you know, this is just, you pump out more oil, there's more opportunity there. There's more opportunity with transportation and refining and all of this. What are some of the ways that people can participate in these opportunities, Brian?
You know, we just talked a lot about pipeline infrastructure and the amount of new pipeline that we're going to be built. We estimate that there's going to be over $100 billion of growth projects
in
the next 3 years, which is driving dividend and distribution growth in that sector of 6-8%. So one way to invest in that pipeline infrastructure is through MLPs.
For our listeners, because a lot of people are not familiar with MLPs.
Yeah, MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, they originated with the Tax Reform Act of 1986. And if you're a little bit familiar with REITs, they have the same pass-through tax status as REITs do. The difference is that for income to qualify, the underlying business has to be in the transportation, storage, distribution, or the production of oil and natural gas or other natural resources.
Okay.
The MLPs are a little bit differentiated in that they have pretty sizable yields. The current yield is about 5.7%. And one of the key benefits is that the distributions are mainly a return of capital and not a return on capital. So when you get a dividend or a distribution, it actually reduces your basis and the underlying security that you hold.
So when you guys build your mutual funds and such, you're not putting all the money into one MLP. You know, you're getting very diversified with probably hundreds of these.
That's right. We're taking a portfolio approach to MLP investing. And in our typical, whether it's our separately managed accounts, our closed-end funds, or our open-end fund, have kind of between 20 and 30 MLPs in them.
Neat. Very cool. We're going to definitely take a look at your funds. So there are some opportunities, and MLPs could be part of it either, you know, through a fund like yours, the Tortoise Capital, but also looking at MLPs. Now, do you, you mentioned the tax benefits and the distribution of principal. There's been different thoughts or opinions about MLPs, the risks associated with them. Do you consider them low risk, medium risk, high risk, anything, you know, or is it more about the business that they are investing in themselves as opposed to the structure of the investment?
Yeah, no doubt. That's a great question, one we get all the time. And, you know, relative to other equity securities, I'd consider them low risk. You know, they're not sexy, they're steady. And they're low risk because, you know, they're just transporting products that are critical to the economy and everyday life. Essentially, they're critical assets, and they simply earn a fee for transporting volume, whether it's crude oil, gasoline, or natural gas. The contracts that they sign are very long-term in nature, and even between 5 and 20 years. There's really high barriers to entry or a big economic moat in that they are regulated assets. And
okay.
They have, you know, very long economic lives of 100 years or more if maintained appropriately. And there is a little bit of inherent growth traditionally, which has been about 4 to 6%, a little higher today, between 6 and 8. And that growth comes from, you know, the economy, a little bit from inflation and internal projects. So all in all, in my mind, they're great investments. They're not sexy, but they're kind of low risk and steady.
Steady can be plenty sexy. People are looking for that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Brian Kessens, a chartered financial analyst, is my guest today, portfolio manager and senior investment analyst at Tortoise Capital, tortoiseadvisors.com. Quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk a little bit about natural gas with Brian. Stay right there.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Kessens is my guest today. And before we get to natural gas, I thought of one more question as it relates to crude oil. Brian, that you know, we talked about the domestic production now being, we use, I guess our total is around 15 million barrels a day, and more than half of that's coming from domestic production. The opportunities there, of course, are that that can continue to grow. And the question in my mind is that, you know, we look at the price of oil, you know, the quote of the West Texas Intermediate or the Brent, you know, the prices, they fluctuate, but they're, you know, with all of this production, they're not dropping, you know, they're not dropping down substantially or significantly. And people probably scratch their heads and go, well, why is that? And so what would you comment about that?
Yeah, the, you know, oil, aside from differently from natural gas right now, is really a global market.
Yes.
And historically, a lot of the growth on the oil side has come from the Middle East.
Right.
And to some extent, Asia and offshore West Africa. What's happened really over the past couple of years is a lot of that growth that we've historically had is slowing a lot. And the U.S. now is really the growth engine for crude oil around the world. So really what's happened is, it being a global market, our growth is really just offsetting some of the demand growth that we're seeing in the rest of the world. That's
okay.
Why you've seen, you know, WTI or Brent, pick your favorite benchmark, kind of maintain a higher level of price versus a lower level.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Now, on the natural gas side, you made a kind of a differentiation there with crude oil. Is natural gas tend to be used within the country? It's produced more so than crude oil being imported, exported?
Correct. Natural gas, certainly different than crude oil, is very much right now a domestic market.
Why is that?
And it's just, if you think about it, it's easier to ship crude oil, it being a liquid, around the world than it is natural gas. Natural gas, it is possible to transport on a marine vessel, but the process is much more intensive.
Yeah.
So natural gas tends to be a domestic market, and really, when we talk about the competitive advantages that the U.S. has from an industry perspective, that's really one of them, and that our input costs for natural gas tend to be about $4 per MCF, whereas around the world, one example would be Japan. Japan's paying $18 per MCF natural gas, so that's a big differentiator.
What's the unit you refer to?
It's a MCF, per metric cubic, or cubic foot, essentially,
of
natural gas.
All right, I'm learning. You're bringing me up to speed, Brian. Okay, so I've heard, of course, the terminology is, I'm sure you have, Brian, that we are, quote unquote, even, you know, with reference to natural gas, we are the OPEC of natural gas, if we ever can get to all of it under the Appalachian Mountains or wherever we have it. So we have a lot of cubic feet of natural gas, and so, you know, what's next? I mean, you know, is where's the opportunity? How do we get to it? How do we use it? You know, how do we, you know, leverage that?
Yeah, you know, the opportunity in natural gas is from a supply perspective. We have well over 100 years of supply of natural gas. And really, we're waiting for the demand to increase on the natural gas side for us to tap more of the supply. And that demand is going to come from increased industrial activity.
Yeah.
Be one thing. What we're doing is we're trying to slowly kind of weed ourselves off of some of the dirtier fuels for the utility industry, that being coal.
Sure.
And we're converting our coal-fired power plants to natural gas-fired power plants. And then what's likely going to happen near the end of the decade is we're going to start to export a little bit of natural gas. If you just went back 10 years ago, it looked like we were going to have to import natural gas. So it's really been, you know, you mentioned revolution. There's no more of a revolution in the U.S. than we've seen in the natural gas market.
Excellent. Well, Brian, we'll have to have you come back and talk another day. Brian Kessens has been our guest, CFA at Tortoise Capital. He's a portfolio manager and senior investment analyst as well. TortoiseAdvisors.com to get more information. And they've also got a new website, UncoverEnergy.com, which has been created to educate investors on energy sector and how to invest in it. Brian, thank you very much for being on the program.
My pleasure, David.
All right.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.